felt. What about these people in Clerkenwell who, in the spirit of the Olympics, put five Olympic bagels or bigles up in their window and were speedily told by the council to take them down? So I'm asking about branding in the Olympics, and joining us on the programme, Paul Hitchin. Hello, Paul. Good morning.
Good morning.
Why are the Olympic Committee so keen to guard these rings so jealously that really council officers would go out and demand that five bagels are taken down from a window in Clerkenwell?
Well, they've got to be seen to police them, and they do need to police the Olympic brand, because those that have invested in it, the sponsors, have, you know, put a considerable amount of money into it. But I think on a case-by-case example, like the bagel-bigel example, I think it's got to be a judgment call. I mean, this is an independent. It's not a big commercial operator. It's somebody that has, you know, spontaneously got into the spirit of the occasion. And I think, you know, the Olympic values of friendship and respect seem to be a little bit compromised if you're going to come down heavily on somebody that just, is a local. I think they're a charity, actually, this particular outlet. So it's a gallery too. So yeah, they're just getting into the spirit of the occasion. It seems to be a bit heavy-handed. Mm-hmm. And, I think that then there can be a bit of a backlash. If you all stand back and remember the games as being, you know, heavily brand-policed, and anybody that dared to wave a flag or, you know, celebrate, without reading the guidelines first, it would be a bit of a sad case of affairs.
You are a brand consultant. You're the author, yes, of a book called Create the Perfect Brand. So it would help us enormously, Paul, if you would explain to us what, in your view, is the perfect brand. Are there some untainted, unblemished brands out there to which all other brands aspire?
You know, I think the perfect brand is something that's, you know, carried through heart and soul, and it's really genuine. I think we all instinctively know when we're being cheated or missold. And it's about the performance of the brand. Reputation, you know, the everything that we know and understand about a business, the first cornerstone really is your reputation.
Yes.
The experience that you provide. So, you know, the reason I want to come back and what I get from it, and is it relevant to me?
Mm-hmm.
And then third case would be the expectation, and that is the license that the brand then creates to innovate and take its loyal, you know, fans and enthusiasts with them on that journey.
Okay, well, when I thought perfect brand, two things sprung to mind, and I it's not that I spend all morning considering this, I'm just giving you the two first brands that sprung into my mind. One was John Lewis.
Uh-huh.
Never Knowing the Undersold is a slogan.
Absolutely.
We've all grown up with. The ads have tapped into this incredibly well, with that brand and that blend of nostalgia and respect for your parents and, you know, family history. We all know about that. So John Lewis was one. The other one was Ben and Jerry's. Because,
uh-huh,
I think we think Ben and Jerry are real people. They actually exist. They genuinely like ice cream. They really care about it. They put some humour and punch and oomph into it. They're also supposed to have really good kind of ecological credentials, etc. and so forth. Those are my two. Am I wrong? Am I right?
I think you're absolutely right, and they're personal too. You know, this is the point about it. I mean, we use brands to identify ourselves. They're status symbols. We, you know, in a moment's blink of an eye, we can evaluate somebody by the shoes they're wearing, their jeans, their car they're driving, and people, you know, tend to buy things that they believe in. So, you know, they use them as part of their self-expression too. So your brands that you've just given as examples are personal to you.
Mm-hmm.
And they obviously have real meaning to you, and you enjoy the experience that they provide. And that experience hasn't been broken down, I take it, over the years that you've been, you know, enjoying the products that they provide
for
you.
Give me a couple of brands that spring to mind when you think of the perfect brand.
Well, I actually think of Marmite, because it's probably the brand that I've had the longest conscious sort of awareness of since, I think, you know, being called a Marmite baby, I think sort of sticks in the head.
Mm.
You know, it's that sort of, you know, on your soldiers before you go to school, you know, and a spread that even when I went backpacking when I was, in my early 20s, I even took some with me in my rucksack, and I suppose that's ultimate brand loyalty, that you fear that you might not be able to get this product somewhere else.
You see, I'm surprised that you've chosen Marmite, because I think some people might say Marmite scored a spectacular own goal, which in fact was so significant that it percolated into the language in general, which is when people describe something as Marmite, which means you either love it or you hate it. In other words, you've got hate encompassed in the brand name, When you think of Marmite, you divide instantly. And some people, whereas if you say, where's hate in the John Lewis brand, for example, it's nowhere, is it?
Well, I know, but actually, I think that makes you an arch brand. You know, you become what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, and you identify yourself by your detractors, and your loyal followers are ever more loyal. You know, it becomes part of their lifestyle choice. So, you know, like Harley Davidson, and the way that you know, one of the most popular commercial logo tattoos is that of the Harley Davidson logo, because it captures a whole lifestyle for those people that believe in it. But for other people, it would, you know, it's, well,
it's very easy though, isn't it, for a brand to go from perfect to tarnished, tainted, or simply so 2000 and late. And it was only the other day that we were discussing, oh my goodness, what's happened to Marks and Spencer's, which used to be the benchmark of all benchmarks.
Yes, yeah, and they had a similar issue back in 2008 too. You know, it's been difficult for them. But what you have to do is to remain relevant. You know, you can be, you know, firmly embedded in the culture, a sort of a family favourite. But if you cease to be relevant to your lifestyle, then, you know, you can't just pin this loyalty and hope and expect it to stay there all the time. You have to continue to be relevant and innovate.
Okay, what would your advice be to those who are the custodians of the Olympic brand? Because I think they may be perceived as rather heavy-handed.
Yeah, and maybe actually it is in some cases the local councils that are really, you know, becoming the kind of stormtroopers of the brand, and not so much the actual, you know, LOCOG. And from what I can see and what they've said, you know, they don't want to stifle the enthusiasm for the games. You know, the sports minister has said that you know, they want to be careful about how they police the brand. And I think that at the top level, I'm sure there'll be a kind of level-headed judgment call on whether the local florist has created a, you know, a colourful display that might on some technical level infringe the brand guidelines, as opposed to some organised chain of outlets that are doing it, you know, simultaneously in every single shop window that they own.
Thank you, Paul, for joining us. Paul Hitchin, brand consultant and author of the book Create the Perfect Brand. Have you ever felt?